Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Josh DeCook. Most Sundays you'll find me in the back, actually. I work on the production crew, so whether I'm doing sound or doing live stream, it's much more comfortable back there, to be completely honest with you. But today I get the opportunity to be in front this morning and share with you what I feel like God has laid on my heart. So excited to be here this morning and start to share with you all. And yeah, as we continue in our series entitled Long Hair Don't Care. And I, like Mike, also understand the feeling of preaching a sermon series that talks about long hair, because I do not have long hair. The hair is getting shorter, the hair is thinning, and eventually it will be gone. So I'm super excited to stand up here and preach about a sermon series that cuts me deep to my core. That being said, I want to start this morning by talking about something near and dear to my heart, and that is ice cream. I am what you would consider to be an ice cream-aholic. I don't want to say it's an addiction, because you probably could. I just really, 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 really like ice cream. And it doesn't matter the weather outside, I will eat ice cream no matter what. -7 with a blizzard, 20 degrees below wind chill, ice cream. 45 and raining, sounds like a good time for ice cream. If it's 90 with 100% humidity, ice cream. Right, there is no reason not to have ice cream. And I like to think I embody the post office motto when it comes to ice cream. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays this man from the swift consumption of his ice cream. And now, you could argue that this love came because I grew up about 15 minutes away from the ice cream capital of the world in Lamar's, Iowa. But it actually started much earlier than that. See, my dad turned me on to something called chocolate malts. And you'll see a picture up there of a chocolate malt. And now we have to draw a very clear distinction, okay? A malt is very, very different than a milkshake. Very different, okay? A malt carries with it something called malt mix. Malt mix is one of the single best things ever created. If you've ever had Whoppers, malt balls, right? It's just incredible. Now, that being said, I learned at 25 that I have a gluten allergy. So malt mix and I are no longer friends. We're no longer compatible. We broke up about 24 years ago. No. 16 years ago. About 16 years ago, we broke up. And we're going to stop talking about malt mix because it's just painful to actually go through that. But it was incredible. And we would go to different restaurants and we'd find which restaurants had the best malts. And it was so much fun to go and say, ooh, we're going there because I'm going to get a good malt, right? But eventually, you know, buying malts everywhere gets expensive. So then what my father introduced me to next was something called chocolate goop. It's interesting. Most people say, oh my gosh, what are you talking about goop? What we did was you take 2 scoops of vanilla hard serve ice cream. Put them in a cup, you put some chocolate sauce on it, then you put it in the microwave. Now, there's an exact science to this, because you have to know how long to keep it in the microwave. My parents' microwave, when I was growing up, it had to be in there for 7 seconds. 7. 8 was too long, 6 wasn't enough. Our microwave at our house now is 10 seconds, because our microwave is less powerful than my parents' was. So you put it in for 7 seconds at my parents' house, now for 10. And what you do is when you take it out, you just go after that sucker. Right? And you're getting it down to the consistency that's like a milkshake or a malt. And once I learned as a child that you could put malt mix in this, it was over. Right? This is just the best thing ever. Then what happened is they started coming out with this ice cream around Christmas. Now, this ice cream creates a lot of visceral reactions within people, so bear with me here. But this is none other than peppermint stick ice cream. Thank you. Some people love this ice cream. Some people think this is the most disgusting thing that's ever been created in the history of the world, because why would you put peppermint sticks in an ice cream? To me, this ice cream signifies Christmas, and it's incredible, and I will fight you if you disagree with my opinion on this. It is peppermint ice cream that has chunks of green and red peppermints broken up in it, and I firmly believe that over the years, they started putting smaller and smaller chunks in there, and sometimes you get some that doesn't even have any. And I feel robbed and cheated when that happens, and I will have a conversation with Wells Blue Bunny about that later. But After Peppermint Stick, I've now been introduced to a place in Grimes, Iowa called Heavenly Delights. Mm-hmm. Heavenly Delights has a flavor that's called Bear Creek Caramel. And Bear Creek Caramel is vanilla ice cream with caramel swirls. It's got chocolate caramel cups in it. And this is quite possibly one of the most amazing ice creams I've ever experienced. Now, I am not getting paid. I have no NIL deal with Heavenly Delights. But I promise you, you will not be disappointed if you go to Heavenly Delights and you get Bear Creek Caramel ice cream. I actually told the first service, if anyone wanted to leave during, like, get up right now, you can go because you'll be back in time and I could eat it between services. But I have a very, very, very strong affection for ice cream. Now, the question to ask is why, right? Why are you so passionate about ice cream? What is it about ice cream that makes you go into such incredible lengths describing it on a Sunday morning when it really doesn't seem to need that much description? Ice cream to me is what I consider to be a comfort food. It's that food that I run to when I'm feeling just like, oh goodness, I would rather eat my emotions right now than deal with the emotions that I'm feeling. I bet everyone in here can identify with that feeling of like, oh, this is hard. And you probably have that thing you're already thinking of that I go to that if I'm feeling like I don't want to deal with what I'm experiencing right now. Now, the truth that I'm confessing to all of you is that I have had a tendency to make some emotional, impulsive decisions throughout my life. And emotional eating is just one of the ways that I have made emotional decisions. So keep this in mind, this thought of emotional decision-making, making impulsive decisions as we jump back into our Long Hair Don't Care series. Today we're going to be in Judges chapter 14. And remember, last week, Mike really set the stage for where we're going in this. We're talking about Samson. Samson wasn't nearly as strong and big and massive as people really made him out to be. Samson was never supposed to be a picture of the ultimate strongman. Samson was supposed to be a picture of what God can do through his people when they rely on his strength. Samson wasn't meant to be the Jason Momoa. That's a bad image we get in our heads. It reminds me of the softball players when they're all these men's league tournaments behind our house and they walk in and I swear if you hit them with a pin, they'll pop, right? They're just huge, ripped people, and if they flinch, the ball is going to fly 600 feet. It's just the way it works. But that's not the definition of a man who is strong with the Lord. So if you have a Bible this morning or a Bible on your phones, flip it open to Judges chapter 14. It's after the book of Joshua, which I think is the best named book in the Bible, and it's right before the book of Ruth. Now, if you don't have a Bible, the words are going to be on the screen, and if you need a Bible, please go ahead and head back to the Next Steps area. There's Bibles back there, and we love it when they disappear. So if you're in need of one, please make sure you grab one. Now, Judges 14 is where we see everything really start to go wrong for Samson. At the end of chapter 13, we see pretty clearly that Samson is set up very, very well. We know that Samson grew and the Lord blessed him. We know that the Spirit of the Lord has begun to stir in him. But now we start in chapter 14, and it says this in verse 1. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. His father and mother replied, Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all of our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. And now don't miss this, okay? Samson saw this woman. Samson did not talk to. Samson did not engage with. Samson did not get to know. Samson didn't, I was going to say get her number, but that's a little bit off base for that time frame. Samson did nothing to get to know this woman, right? He simply made this decision based on her appearance. Now, I don't know of a lot of marriages that are going to be overly strong or have a good foundation if they're built upon one person seeing the other person from afar and saying, you're hot, I like you, you're mine, let's get married. You see, this outlines flaw number one in Samson's life. And that's the fact that Samson is impulsive. Samson didn't take time to think this through. He didn't consider the consequences. He saw, he liked, he wanted. His parents even tried to step in and they said, Samson, like, your decision-making process is a little flawed here. Couldn't you pick from one of your relatives? Which, that's another conversation for another day. But why a Philistine woman? See, Samson's parents knew that God had forbidden the Israelites of marrying non-Israelites. So this presents a huge problem for them. But Samson didn't care. Samson made the decision he wanted to make when he wanted to make it, because that's how he felt. We see it again, starting in verse 8, where it says this: sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. And in it, he saw a swarm of bees and honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate it as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now, remember when last week Mike outlined the three no's of a Nazirite? No grapes, no dead things, no haircuts. Those are the three things they had to make sure they did not do. Now, this lion's carcass is the same lion that Samson had run up on him, and he ripped it apart as one rips apart a young goat. And we're not going to dig into the young goat thing. I think Mike covered that well enough last week. But he ripped this lion apart. So this lion is dead, laying there, because he killed it. So Samson then scoops the honey out of the dead lion and eats it. He eats it. This is a huge no-no for a Nazirite. They've explicitly been told, you will not do this. You should not have any contact with dead stuff, let alone scoop honey out of this dead thing and eat it. If a Nazirite did this, they were considered ceremonially unclean. So that meant then that they were not able to worship God in the temple. They were disconnected from God. But impulsively, Samson decides, I see honey, I like honey, I eat honey. That was his decision-making. That was his thought process. It was an impulsive decision. He didn't care about the consequences. He didn't care about anything like that. He wanted to do this. And these two instances start to show us the pattern of Samson making decisions that hurt himself. Now, let me tell you something. This is incredibly true in our lives as well. When we make decisions based out of impulse, when we make decisions based solely out of emotion in that moment, we oftentimes end up disregarding the potential consequences of our decisions, where we get hurt. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's binge eating ice cream and feeling like crap for the next 3 hours, we make decisions solely out of impulse and emotion, and it hurts us. Now, if we're lucky, it stops there. But more often than not, it's not just us that's hurt. We hurt the people around us. Now, remember, Samson not only ate the honey. Samson gave the honey to his parents. He didn't tell them where this honey came from. Samson took the honey, gave it to his parents, and his parents ate some. So now, Samson's not only messed with his relationship with God, he's not only disconnected himself, Samson has impacted his parents. Now, his parents are ceremonially unclean. Now, they need to reconnect with God. So Samson's decisions are not only hurting himself, but impacting those around him. See, our impulsive decisions do the same exact thing. Just like Samson, our impulsive decisions create so much death and destruction to the lives of those around us. I've heard Mike say before that being a pastor is being a professional Christian, and I admit that I have to laugh at that because I used to be a pastor, actually. I used to be a professional Christian, and unfortunately, I fell into a trap that thinking because I was a professional Christian, because I was a pastor, I was doing enough to be connected to God because I was preaching, I was talking to people about God, and I carried the title of being a pastor. I thought that meant that I was connected enough to the true source of life. But I'm sure as you all are hearing this, you're thinking, no, that's not even close to being true. And it was wrong. It was incredibly wrong. And hear me well, it didn't start that way. I don't think we ever go into things thinking, all right, I'm going to get comfortable and just stop trying. We go into things on fire, right? And when I got into ministry, it was exciting. I was passionate about it. I was fired up for the Lord. I was connected to God. I was loving what we were doing in ministry. But I started to get comfortable. Started thinking I was pretty good at this whole pastor thing. I remember what coaches used to say to me during practices where they're like, hey, make a choice today. You either get better or you get worse. You never stay the same. That's so incredibly true when it comes to our relationship with the Lord, because I started relying more on myself, believing that I'm capable of this and look at all the great things I'm doing. And I was spending less and less time with God. And much like Samson, I started making impulsive decisions. I was making decisions and not only thinking about myself and what I wanted. I started listening to people tell me how good I was as a pastor and started to believe that I was special. Look at how good I am at this. Look at how strong I am in being able to do this on my own. I thought I had good advice. I thought I had good ideas. I thought I had great opportunities for ministry, and I could do all of this. And you'll notice the pattern here. I, me. See, just like Samson, where he was impulsive, pride started to really impact Samson's life. And I experienced the exact same thing. Funny thing about pride is that it's often a symptom of something deeper. And it's often a deeper insecurity that lies within us. You see, I was running on empty. I knew I was running on empty, but I couldn't possibly let anybody know that. I had to put on this face of being the pastor who had it all together. I can stand up and preach. I can lead students in their relationship with the Lord. I need to be the example of what it looks like to be a strong Christian man who's connected to God. And I was terrified that people would figure out the truth and that I was struggling. I was not that person. I was operating 100% out of me, myself, and I. I was disconnected from the true source of our strength. And it's easy for us to look at this example of Samson and say, well, it's pretty clear Samson was doing this, right? I mean, you see everything leading up to it. But unfortunately, it's even harder for us to examine our own lives, to look at ourselves and say, geez, I might be going down the exact same path. Fortunately, I had the opportunity to work with a counselor because I burned out really hard. I burned out really hard, and I worked with a counselor who helped me understand the process I was using to make decisions, and it's going to be up on the screen here. It's called a void, filler, feel loop that I was stuck in. And here's the way it works, right? We all have a void in our life. We all have something that we feel like we're missing, and oftentimes we can't name it. But what we do then is we choose to fill it with things. So you might fill it with ice cream, for example, because maybe that'll make you feel better. You might fill it with looking at images you shouldn't. Honestly, whatever it is, right? You fill in the blank. But you choose to fill this void with this thing, and you end up feeling a way that brings you back to the void you first had, because you don't feel better when you fill it with ice cream. You don't feel better when you fill it with whatever that thing is. You end up feeling the exact same way, or sometimes feeling even worse. So you're back at the void, then you find something else to fill it, and you feel terrible, and then you come back to the void, and you fill it with something else. It's a cycle that runs again and again and again, because we think that we can find something to fill this void that's going to help us get through it, and we'll be okay. Now, I've heard it phrased this way before, and this really rang true for me. I had a God-shaped hole in my heart. I was missing something. And I don't know about each of you, but that was me. The problem was, instead of going to the true source of strength, instead of reconnecting with God, instead of chasing that, I made the decision to do what a lot of us Midwesterners think we have to do. I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to deal with it. And I'm going to take care of this myself, because I cannot possibly let anyone know that I am weak, I am broken, I am struggling. I have to be able to handle everything that is thrown at me, because that's what's expected of me. I want to tell you something this morning, and you might already know this, but I want you to hear me say it. We are not built to do this thing alone. We are not built to do this thing alone. We are built for community. When God created Adam, He recognized that Adam was alone and it wasn't good, so he created Eve as a helper, as a partner. We are not meant to be alone. God's desire is for us to be in relationship with him and with relationship with those who surround us. We surround ourselves with people who care about us and are willing to speak truth into our lives. We surround ourselves with people who we can be raw and authentic with and say, "This, I'm struggling with this," and just share. And not people that have to fix it, but people that can listen, that can love you, that can care about you. But at the same time, they can speak truth into your lives because sometimes we need to hear it. And yeah, this is my shameless plug for house groups because it's that important to surround yourself with people. I struggled with this so incredibly much. It was hard enough for me to want to talk to other people about things that I was struggling with, to want to go to somebody and say, "I am not well right now. I need help." But the thought of going to God with these things terrified me. I was once asked, "How would you enter the throne room of God?" And my answer to that question was, "On my hands and knees crawling. Because I do not feel like I am worthy to be in the presence of God. God has always been up here, and I've always been down here. So what could I possibly have to offer if I walk into the throne room of God standing up? Because I am not worthy to do that." Here's the lie that I bought into. God is up there. I am here. And he couldn't possibly love me if he really, really knew what was going on with me. Now, thankfully, there were people in my life who helped me understand the truth. And that truth is this: God is not somewhere off there. God is right here. He is right here, close enough for you to reach out and touch him. The creator of the universe, who created all things, loves you more than you could possibly understand or imagine. And all he's wanting is for you to simply turn and be with him. That's it. To turn and be with him. To spend time together, no matter the baggage you carry, no matter what you bring into the relationship, no matter what. Now, I worked with that same counselor, helped me actually understand how I could connect with God, because for so long I struggled with it. And we started by picturing a place for me that was calm and peaceful. And it's actually ironic. I started playing Minecraft with my son. I don't know if there's any Minecraft fans in here, but it's oddly reminiscent of Minecraft, where you're creating this world, right? And I was doing this. I was creating this image in my head of where I could go to be with God. So I was like, all right, this is what the place looks like. And this is all the things that are in the place. And then what I did is I imagined a bench. It used to be a tree that was kind of like this, but then I'm like, I'm getting old. I need a place to lean my back, so I'm going to put a bench in this place. So there's a bench in this place. Now, what it was I would sit with God in this place, just the two of us, right here. And God would sit next to me and just wrap his arm around me and hold me. And I would bring everything to God in this place. This wasn't a transactional conversation where, "Hey, God, I need this, 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 and this. Thanks for all the blessings. I'm done. I'm out." Because our prayer life can become transactional, but God isn't transactional. God is relational. God desires community from each of us. So it was me going to him in this place, me sharing about what was good, what was bad, what was hard, what I was struggling with, but then just being with God, just spending time and listening, just connecting with and communing with. As I started doing this, the decisions I was making became less about me. They became less born out of impulse, less born out of pride, and instead, so much more about where God was leading me, where God was directing me. My decisions became healthier from a standpoint of these decisions are being made from a place where I'm connecting with God. See, Samson was never supposed to be the main character. God was. Samson was supposed to be pointing people to God, but Samson made the story about himself. And friends, we do the exact same thing. We have an amazing opportunity to point people to God. But we trip and fall over ourselves because we think the story is about us and we are the most important people in the story. The story is not about us. It's about him. So if you find yourself making bad decisions, you make decisions based out of emotions, based out of pride, based off of impulse, ask yourself this question. Is this a me decision? Or is this a we decision? Are you really making decisions that are spirit-led? Decisions that you've spent time with God wrestling with this and truly communing with him so you know I'm good. I know where I'm going with this because God and I are on the same page. Or is this decision that you've made based out of you, what you want, what you need, what you think you deserve or are entitled to? Samson did it. I've done the same thing, and I bet a lot of us here have too. But there's so many impulsive, prideful decisions that we make that not only hurt us, but hurt those around us. And friends, the good news is you don't have to continue in that. When we turn to God, when we commune with him, when we connect with him, when we choose to fill that void with him, our decisions become spirit-led decisions because we are truly connected to the source of our strength. So this is my challenge to each of us this morning. Find your God place. Find that place. Go through the work and the energy and the effort of identifying that place where you can spend time with God. And once you find that place, prioritize spending time there. I don't know about you, but I could find so many other things to do in my day than spend time with God. And I think we all recognize that's backwards. I own the fact that I struggle with it. So prioritize it. Make it a priority. And as you do this, start paying attention to the decisions you make, and quite honestly, buckle up. Because when you start making decisions based on where God is leading, where God is guiding, where God is directing, he is going to do some incredible things in your life and the lives of those around you. Will you pray with me? Father, we come before you today, and there are so many decisions that we face in our lives. There's so many decisions that are hard and are challenging, and we don't get it right all the time. We don't. But Father, I pray for each of us here that we can truly seek you, that we can connect with you, we can commune with you, we can be in relationship with you, so that when we get to those places where we have those decisions to make, Father, we've already got it in place. We know where we're going. We know how we're getting there because we're doing it with you. Help us to make we-based decisions, Father, and not me-based decisions. We ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.